And now it's time for Power of Prophecy with your host, former professor at the University of Texas at Austin, career United States Air Force officer, and best-selling author, Tex Mars.
Hello, friends. This is Tex Mars. Welcome to another edition of Power of Prophecy. Hey, I've got a great friend of mine with me today, and we're going to be talking about, well, a lot of subjects. You don't want to miss today's program because Victor Thorne is here, and he has a new book we're offering in the ministry, and you'll want to get a pencil and paper so you can take down some information about how to get this book. A little later in the program, we'll give you our phone number, but New World Order Assassins. New World Order Assassins. Well, I'll tell you, I don't know if anybody, this book is around 280 pages, some number of pictures in it, interesting things in it, but I'll tell you, it's packed with documented, should we call it information or revelations, secrets, whatever, but it's got some things in it that I haven't seen before, and as you know, I'm fairly well read about conspiracies, but Victor Thorne himself, as many of you know, he's pretty top flight. Let's just say it right out. You know, he's right now a reporter for American Free Press. Some very good people that do a great thing with their newspaper. But Victor Thorne has his own website as well, and he's authored many books. I know he's got a trilogy, you know, I think three books about Bill and Hillary Clinton that are quite unusual. He's exposed the New World Order before in books. One of the books that we offer in the ministry here was about 9/11. 9/11. If you really want to know the truth about 9/11 and the Israeli Mossad's connection to it, it's one of the very few books out on that topic, and I think the best because it just flat out states it and gives documented facts. So we offer that book as well about 9/11. So after all of the nonsense and propaganda, you want to find out the truth about what happened on 9/11? Well, just call us here at the ministry, and we've got the book for you by Victor Thorne. But on to today's topic, New World Order Assassins. Wow, I love the cover of this book. Quite dramatic. Skeletons, sort of bullseye targets on people. And then, oh my goodness, everybody's included in here. The murder of Marilyn Monroe, John F. Kennedy, Malcolm X, Martin Luther King, Bobby Kennedy, you know, the Sirhan-Sirhan connection, Charles Manson, and then, of course, George Wallace, who was shot and rendered very, very terribly in a wheelchair for the rest of his life. The Son of Sam murders, the Columbine School killings, John Hinckley's attempted assassination of Ronald Reagan. Hey, John Lennon, that's a sort of an interesting situation there. And the cult of Diana, who Victor Thorne calls the DNA princess. Ah, we'll be talking about that. So much here. And so without further ado, Victor Thorne, welcome to the program.
Well, it's great to be here, Tex, and as always, thanks for having me on, and it's always a pleasure.
You know, one of the things, Victor, that impresses me about your book, I mean, once you finish with this book, then you realize the world is not exactly as it seems. Is that the way it struck you in your career as a conspiracy researcher?
Yeah, I've been studying this stuff for over 20 years now, and this book here is actually the third in a trilogy of my New World Order trilogy. So if people wonder, well, how did you pick these subjects to write about for this book? And it's really out of all the other books I have that I've written so far, these are subjects that I had yet to cover. So I picked, really the most high-profile cases from 1962, where the book starts with Marilyn Monroe, all the way up to 1999 with the Columbine High School shooting that I know everybody still remembers to this day. So really for those, three or four decades in between there, these are the cases that really shaped not only America, but also England, as you mentioned, with Princess Diana, and also with the Port Arthur massacre, which happened in Australia, where they had this big gun grab, and the government came in and took over 600,000 guns, Tex. So, you know, these are all things that could potentially face America down the line. But, yeah, these are really the big cases. And once you read it, you realize how much the government, in collusion with the mainstream media, doesn't tell us about all these things. And any time a new event happens, the techniques that are provided in this book, in the introduction, the things that you should always look for, those can always be applied then to any new false flag event or political assassination or any of those things.
Now, that's an interesting concept there. You know, I've talked to, and I think people sort of blinked before they got it, although I think a lot of the listeners to this program understand it. You know, really, you're not a conspiracy theorist, not really. You're a conspiracy scientist. And what you're saying is there are scientific techniques, just like, you know, laboratory people, they have a certain mode of operation. So you have sort of a 1-2-3 way to look at things when any major event occurs in the world, don't you? I mean, it is a scientific approach.
It really is. And in the introduction to the book, there's a glossary of dozens and dozens of different, I guess, commonalities or common threads that weave through all of these cases. And they can also be applied, of course, to other subjects that aren't included in this book. But, you know, just a couple examples would be the use of mind control or also diaries. And you'll see in this book, Tex, I'm sure you know, that many of the victims had diaries that they compiled that were highly damning and very immediately threatening to those in power at the time. The first example, of course, is Marilyn Monroe. And instead of her being this tragic suicide via an overdose of sleeping pills, what this book shows is that she was absolutely murdered, and she was killed by people in very high places that her diary would have toppled. And, you know, I'm referring to the Kennedy family, that after she was done with her affair with Jack Kennedy, the president, she then began an affair with Bobby Kennedy, who was the attorney general. And Marilyn wised up this time. She started compiling notes and writing this diary of all the conversations she had with Bobby. And then when he was ready to dump her, she threatened on the Monday after her death, if she would have lived, that she already had contacted journalists and was going to hold a press conference, hold up this diary, and reveal all of these things that she had learned after being with both of the Kennedys. Now, with that kind of damning information, this would have toppled Camelot at the time. The presidency would have been destroyed. So Marilyn, she was a problem, and the Kennedys and their cohorts took care of this problem. So that's just one of the themes that runs through this book, and it, you know, it allows people to really focus in on these really vital aspects of each of these cases that they can use then to look beneath the propaganda and the disinformation that the media gives us when reporting on these events.
You know, it seems to me, as I look at your book here, and you go through all of these various killings, assassinations, secret plots, and so forth, and I want to compliment you. I think it's sort of a one-of-a-kind book. But you mentioned the techniques and the modes of operation are the same in all of these cases in one way or another. It seems like there's a thread also that goes through each one that connect. Remember the movie A Beautiful Mind? Russell Crowe played in that?
Yes, yes.
And he supposedly believed he, you know, they tried to show that he was insane. He believed in conspiracy theories. And he made up this, what would you call it, a diagram. You know, how this conspiracy connects to this one, and this murder to this one, and the CIA to this one. And pretty soon it filled up the whole wall. You know, it's a little, you know, arrows pointing to this one and then back to this one. But that's what you show in your book in a very ingenious way. For example, the murder of Marilyn Monroe that you start with, that I think is fascinating. But that implicates the Kennedys. But wait. The very next chapter, you talk about the JFK assassination, and then the very next one, you connect it with the murder of a woman, and I think is one of the more interesting chapters, named Mary Pinchot Meyer. And I'm going to ask you about that in just a minute. So in a way, there's like, you know, a great seamstress in the sky, although I think they're down here on earth or in hell, has taken their sewing or knitting needle and just sort of threaded through all of these things, haven't they?
There really is. And the Kennedys even go further than with not only Bobby's assassination, but also with Martin Luther King. So it's almost like a non-ending stream. And like you said with the film A Beautiful Mind, is that none of these cases exist solely by themselves. There's always tentacles that reach out to all of them. And I even mentioned a few characters, especially back in the 60s and 70s, that seem to keep popping up all the time, Tex. These different scenes, like George Bush Sr. and Richard Nixon and J. Edgar Hoover and James Jesus Angleton, who was, you know, Michael Collins Piper mentions him quite frequently in his book Final Judgment. And, you know, whenever something happens, one of these four guys somehow always seems to have their finger on the pulse of what's happening. And, you know, so that's another aspect, is kind of like almost a subcontext running through all of these, is that there are people called fixers or handlers that are always right there lurking in the shadows, making sure that each of these events unfolds as they intend it to happen.
Well, you know, of course, you've written so much about Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton in your books, and I encourage people to go to your website. So a little later on, I would like you to give your website information out where they can get those books, the Clintons, because who knows? You know, Hillary, she's Secretary of State. She could end up on her feet again and become the President of the United States. And I'm sure there are people that would like to see that. But Bill Clinton must be one of these people. His name keeps cropping up in all kinds of ways, whether it's with the drug situation, drug dealing, MENA, Arkansas situation, or the murders. They talk about the Clinton murders. So Clinton somehow seems to be woven into all of this since the time he was a young man, huh?
Well, he really is. And then, even more so, right up to the current day, Tex, is that when the earthquake hit Haiti, who were the two big saviors that went down there to save the people and raise all the money that mysteriously hasn't bought anything or rebuilt anything but Bill Clinton and George W. Bush? And, you know, who could forget a few years ago when there was the big tsunami, it was George Bush Sr. and Bill Clinton that were going and trying to save the world. So, you know, the Bushes and Clintons have still been this dynasty, and I'm convinced right now that instead of Barack Obama actually being the one who's managing this war, our most recent war in Libya, that who's the woman who's at every single meeting there is worldwide? It's Hillary Clinton. You know, she's the one with the experience. She's the one who knows what's happening, and they just peddle Barack Obama out every once in a while to give a befuddled speech, and he never answers questions. So, you know, yeah, you're exactly right, Tex. And, I mean, you should know because you wrote the book, Big Sister is Watching You, that really chronicled Hillary Clinton and all of the, let's say, nefarious ties of all those people surrounding her during the governorship and also when her and Bill were the co-presidents.
It really is an astonishing thing. And that's why I love this book so much, New World Order Assassins, how it makes all these connections and your mind just starts to be boggled after a while at all of them. Let's talk about Marilyn Monroe.
Okay.
Evidently, she was not as dumb as she was made to be in the movies, you know, the dumb blonde thing. She evidently knew a few things. Now, she may have been a pretty sexually immoral chick, but she knew some things. And as you say, they wanted to make sure she didn't make those public, huh?
Oh, exactly right. And in this diary that I referred to, she had notes in there about her affairs with both Bobby and John Kennedy, notes about the Castro assassination that was being attempted at that time, ties between the mob and the CIA, the Bay of Pigs, even atomic test secrets, and Sam Giancana meeting with John Kennedy and being on the State Department payroll, CIA assassinations. She was probably the most dangerous woman in the world at that time. And via her direct access to John Kennedy and also Bobby, that she had all the insider secrets. And it's interesting that you say that she wasn't the dumb blonde like she was in a movie. And she had a real troubled life and a sordid life of sorts. But towards the end, Tex, she realized that a lot of the problems surrounding her were because nearly every single person handling her and her life and her career was Jewish. And she finally woke up to this fact, and she just sat down one day and says, my attorney's Jewish, my psychiatrist is Jewish, my housekeeper's Jewish, my acting coach is Jewish, my doctor's Jewish, my PR agent's Jewish, my ex-husband's Jewish, and all the studio heads are Jewish, and my life is a mess. So what she said was, I'm going to get rid of all of these vultures in my life and have a new start. And she really finally started towards the final months of her life to get her act together. And I really believe if she hadn't have been murdered that she could have really moved forward and done some remarkable things. And she realized this pivotal fact that everybody that's making my life miserable, that controls every thought that she made, was in this kind of Hollywood Jewish cabal.
Now, that is very fascinating, and I wonder if that does not really give us a bird's-eye view into the sordid and really very sad lives of people like Britney Spears and Michael Jackson.
Oh, I think you have a good point there, and there's, you know, many books and even a couple of DVDs out there about the Jewish creation and control of Hollywood. And, you know, when we look at what they do to people and how they destroy lives out there, that it's no wonder that, you know, they call it Hollyweird instead of Hollywood, because it's really a zoo out there. And Michael Jackson's another perfect example that, you know, a guy who had everything ended up dying this miserable, broken death. And it's tragic. And this really did end up, you know, surrounding Marilyn, because she wasn't ultimately able to escape from their clutches. But it wasn't for lack of trying during those last couple months where she really wanted to become something more than what she had been.
You know, Victor, I was thinking also about Charlie Sheen with his crazy, supposedly crazy behavior and all. And, you know, and he evidently was fired, not because of his immoral behavior, his drinking, his prostitutes and all, you know, crazy tearing up hotel rooms and things like that, but because he sort of outed the producer of his show as a Jew by calling him Haim.
Right, yeah, he called him by his Hebrew name, and that's a pretty...
You know, you're not supposed to know that, you know, Hollywood is run by Jews everywhere, but yeah. then to top it all off, they retaliated by outing the fact that the studio did, that guess what? Charlie Sheen is, surprise, a Jew himself.
Yes, he has a Jew.
And when he was asking about that, he said, oh, yeah, I forgot that I was Jewish. Well,
yeah.
You know, shades of Madeleine Albright and Wesley Clark. I forgot that I was a Jew,
yeah.
Even though I'm bombing
and
killing Christians, you know, with the U.S. military. But it has nothing to do with my being secretly a Jew.
Right.
Oh,
right.
Boy, it's incredible. Well, back to Marilyn Monroe. There's one thing I want to ask you your opinion on. There's that famous film clip, right in the days before Kennedy was assassinated, or Marilyn died. They trotted her out for that birthday party.
Uh-huh.
And remember, she came out there, that dress was just so incredibly tight.
Yep.
That glittering dress that had all the little glitter, what they call those sequins, or...
Yeah.
Okay. And they trotted her out, and... They kept calling for her to come up and, you know, sing a song. She was going to sing a song, Happy Birthday, Mr. President. And she didn't come out, so they announced her exactly three times. And now, Marilyn Monroe, and she didn't come out. Finally, the third time, they said, and now the late Marilyn Monroe. And she came out and sang her little song and left. And then not long after that, she died. Was that some kind of a satanic ritual?
Well, I don't know if that was what type of ritual that was, but I know that it was that she was drunk that night.
So that's what was
taking her so long to come out, that she just wasn't in any shape to come out. And then she was in that dress that was literally spray painted onto her.
Yes.
And then what's interesting is the lead up to that story is that Jackie Kennedy knew for years and years, maybe decades, about all of John Kennedy's philandering.
Wow.
And she never made too big a deal about it. But with Marilyn Monroe really got under Jackie's skin. And Jackie was so furious that Marilyn was going to sing Happy Birthday at Madison Square Garden for John Kennedy that she refused to even attend the event,
oh.
her own husband's birthday party. And the story goes that she was at that point ready to leave John Kennedy until old man Joe Kennedy stopped in and says, I'll put $1 million in a trust fund for you if you don't embarrass the president and destroy Camelot by leaving him. So anyway, that was the last night that at this birthday party, that was the last night that John Kennedy ever saw Marilyn Monroe. He spent the night with her. And then the heat was so heavy because J. Edgar Hoover came in then and said, look what I have. Oh, because J. Edgar Hoover had spies everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And so Marilyn then was furious because she thought that she'd just been discarded by the president. And she had aspirations of actually marrying him. And so to make a long story short then, she kept pestering the wife, trying to call the White House and so forth. So John Kennedy sends Bobby out to California, out to Hollywood, to break it off with Marilyn and say, listen, just leave the president alone. Well, Bobby goes out there, and then he starts an affair with Marilyn, you know, which...
She was pretty much an alluring woman, wasn't she, man?
Oh, my goodness. And then that's really, that's when Marilyn started keeping this diary, which ultimately led to her demise then, because these were secrets that... And we have to remember, Tex, that we don't... Back in them days, we didn't have the internet and all of these different things where... You know, and even the media back there was more protective of the president than they are now.
Oh yeah, you just believed everything. It was when Walter Cronkite said at the end of his CBS News program, and that's the way it is this uh-huh. date. Everybody said, yeah, that's the way it is. They, you know, why? Of course, CBS, ABC, NBC, of course they tell the truth. Why? How dare you to suggest otherwise?
Exactly. Yeah. So what she had in this diary, nobody knew about it. And it would have been literally earth-shaking if she would have. And like I say in the book, she actually had contacted a couple journalists, Dorothy Kilgallen and Walter Winchell, and said, this Monday coming up, I'm coming out and I'm going to blow the roof off of Camelot. And Bobby Kennedy found out about this and... They could not allow it to happen.
That was the end. That was the end of her.
That was the end.
Now, in the next chapter of your book, I see that you talk about the JFK assassination and some interesting things. Some fellow that came out, some mystery man with a DVD, was it? Evidence of Revision?
Correct.
What do you see as, you know, in a nutshell, because we've got so much to discuss here, what happened to JFK?
Well, This was a bringing together of many different forces. And a lot of people out there try to pinpoint it on just one single entity, that it was the CIA or it was, it was the anti-Castro Cubans or it was the mob or it was the Russians or even it was Israel and myself or the bankers or the Texas oil men. And myself, John Kennedy was the last president who actually thought he was the president, who actually acted like he was the president and could actually do things. And he irritated every single one of these forces that I just mentioned. And it's my contention that all of them basically put their heads together and said, we have this common goal that we don't want John Kennedy around anymore. And so they finagled it, and Lee Harvey Oswald obviously was set up as the fall guy. And you know, I believe that not only did he not shoot a shot that day or fire a shot that day, but when you look at all the other chapters, did James Earl Ray and Sir Hahn and Arthur Bremer and Mark David Chapman and even John Hinckley, I go so far as to say, Tex, that I don't believe any of these individuals fired the shots that killed the victims in these books.
Hmm.
None of them did. So
wow.
They were all patsies that were just conveniently put in place so that the other killers could actually do it from the shadows.
So you know, when you were talking earlier in our program about sort of a formula, how these things happen, then, you know, when there's a famous assassination, right away you would begin to look behind the scenes. You're sort of a, let's just call you, Victor Thorne is a conspiracy forensics expert.
Well, I never thought of it that way, but I appreciate that.
Yeah, I'm gonna recommend a TV program to my friends, to my good friends, the Jewish Hollywood producers. Yeah, call it Victor Thorne CSI.
Yeah, I bet they'll be knocking on our door, Tex.
I'll bet they would. They'd pay you millions to probably pay you to shut up rather than to do your scientific studies.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's go to
the latest example is the Jared Loughner case out in Tucson, and I used these same techniques then and wrote, and I know you've written also about that event in your newsletter. So really, you and I use the same kind of techniques that when these events happen, instead of listening to watching what's out there like the Wizard of Oz in front of us, we're the ones that are going around the other side and peeking behind the curtain and getting the real information.
Yes, and you know, I think some people are better at it than I am even. Maybe, well, you're pretty good at it, Victor, so maybe you're one that's superior to me in that. Because, you know, when a terrible event like 9/11 occurs, I, being older and having gone through the era of trust the media, why they wouldn't lie to you, then, you know, I tend to maybe give them a little bit more credence than I should. But nevertheless, I'm never disappointed if I don't trust the media, because suddenly little bits of evidence comes in, and then finally it all just pours in like a flood. And then you realize the way the media portrayed an event is absolutely impossible. So I appreciate younger people like you who maybe weren't entrapped in that matrix as I was as a younger man. And so you're more open-minded to the possibilities because, you know, you've seen them in your lifetime. JFK was an amazing thing, and I think I can honestly say probably 99% of Americans believed it was a lone assassin at that time. And yet, don't opinion polls now show that very few people believe that Lee Harvey Oswald did it?
Oh, it's almost nobody. Yeah, yeah. It's completely shifted the way we view it now. And it just shows what, you know, the passage of time and so many hundreds, really, of books and videos and TV shows and articles just laid out the entire scenario. And, you know, it was really an awful event, whether you liked John Kennedy or not, that here was a president of the United States at broad daylight in one of the biggest cities in America, and, I mean, literally a sitting duck, and they just blew his brains out right then.
And they got away with it.
They
got away with it, and that's astonishing. And they're going to get away with 9/11 if people don't read your book. Let's just put it that way. They'll get away with that, too. And we only have about a minute and a half left, and I want to get into this Mary Pinchot, I guess that's how you pronounce her middle name, Meyer. Now, she was a big-time socialite in Washington, D.C., New York area, and she ended up dead.
She was John Kennedy's last great mistress, and she really had a profound effect on him, that there's a great deal of evidence that she actually even brought LSD to the White House and went on an LSD trip with John Kennedy while he was the president. Well, she also kept a diary during her times, and after John Kennedy was shot, being that she went in all of these high socialite circles and knew people from the intel agencies and the Washington Post and all the senators, and Mary Pinchot Meyer did some talking texts. She told people some of the things that she knew, and she knew Timothy Leary, and her ex-husband was Cord Meyer, who ended up being Bill Clinton's handler while he was taking his little jaunts over to Europe and Russia. So she knew a lot of things. In less than a year after John Kennedy was assassinated, in Georgetown, a man came up and put a bullet in her head and silenced her too. So,
wow.
Yeah, a real tragic story. A beautiful young woman, and she was a woman who knew too much.
When we come back, maybe I'll ask you some more about her, as well as Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, Sirhan, Charles Manson, and so much more. And by the way, before we go for the break, Victor, I want all the feds and all the assassins out there to know that neither Tex Mars nor Victor Thorne keep a diary.
So, we learned our lesson.
Right. Okay, we're going to go for a break now, folks. Hey, stay with us. We'll be back in a moment, and we've got so much more from Victor Thorne, author of New World Order Assassins. I'm Tex Mars. New World Order Assassins. by Victor Thorne. We're offering this book to you, and I'll tell you, you won't regret obtaining this book and reading it. I've had several days of enjoyment out of it. And you say, well, how can you enjoy such things? Well, I like to expose evil. I like to shine a light on the forces of darkness. And I believe intently that that's what we're called to do. You know, the Bible says, have no part with the works of darkness, but rather reprove them. In other words, unmask them, criticize them, attack them. Well, I like that. So we're supposed to be proactive in exposing the darkness. We don't shrink from it. We're not afraid of it. We're truth tellers. That's why I like Victor Thorne. That's why I like his books. And you're going to enjoy, yes, enjoy, as much as you shake your head and say, boy, these people are just evil. The fact is that there are very few out there who are willing and brave enough to expose them. So, please order the book, New World Order Assassins, by Victor Thorne. It's around 280 pages, just out, by the way. Now, what we're asking is $25 for the book, $25. Every cent you give, of course, goes back into the ministry. And Victor has been very good in giving us a very large discount for the book to make it possible for us to offer it to you. New World Order Assassins. Here's how to get your copy. Just phone us toll-free, 1-800-234-9673. Again, that's 1-800-234-9673. Of course, you can write to us. We've been right here at this address for, oh my goodness, Jerry, how many years? Pushing 20 years at the same, that's unusual to be at the same address. And of course, we've been in, I wouldn't call it business, but we've been doing what we're doing for over 25 years now. A little bit of tenure. I'm sure some people would like to shut us down, but thanks to God, we're still here. Our address is Power of Prophecy, 1708 Patterson, Patterson Road, Austin, Texas, 78733, the Republic of Texas. As I say, please don't write down Republic of Texas. That's our little secret, just yours and mine. Just write down USA if you're overseas. That'll get to us. Now, if you'd like to buy this book online, you can do so because it's right on the homepage of our website, powerofprophecy.com. Powerofprophecy.com. Now, I want to tell you about another book. It's not as long and, well, it is documented, but you're going to enjoy it. And I have a selfish reason for telling you about this book. It's Victor Thorne's newest book called Conspiracy Hall of Fame. And guess what? Well, Tex Mars is one of the people talked about in the book. And Victor actually says some of the nice things about me in the book, Conspiracy Hall of Fame. A brief background of 20 of the top conspiracy theorists in modern history. By the way, has a picture here. I don't think it's very, I think he's more handsome than this picture shows. But it has a picture of Victor Thorne on the front cover of the book, Conspiracy Hall of Fame. And he's the author, and that's when you're the author of a book, you want your picture on the front page, go ahead. Biographies include, he has, you know, a couple of pages on each person, but sort of the, some key things you'll want to know. And I was really interested because I have great respect for Victor. I was very curious about who he believed his top 20 conspiracy theorists in modern history are. And boy, some big names here. I don't really deserve to be here, but he made me one of them. Maybe I'm just a friend of his, and he said, I'll give Tex Mars a bone. I don't know. Maybe, but whatever the case, William Cooper is there, and he is deserving. Gary Allen, remember Non Dare Call It Conspiracy? What a great book that was. George Orwell. Well, who could leave George Orwell out of a list like this? Eustace Mullins. Ah, Secrets of the Federal Reserve. Oh, what a great book that was. Anthony Seton, he was a good friend of mine, gave me a lot of his material before he passed on. And he was the one who exposed Order of Skull and Bones. Now, if you think that Tex Mars was the one who exposed that, I wrote the second book out on that subject. So I'll have to give Anthony Seton credit for his groundbreaking work. Hey, Jim Mars is on the book. Jim and I have come to the conclusion that we're cousins. He's a great conspiracy researcher. Some people say I am Jim, or Jim is Tex. Hey, I'll just leave that a mystery. Maybe so. You know, Jim wears a hat, and he has a beard and a mustache and everything. So they say that's Tex Mars disguised. Okay, it could be. That is a mystery. We'll just leave it at that. Michael Hoffman, Des Griffin, Dr. John Coleman, William Guy Carr. I like him because he says Lucifer did it. And you know what? He proves his point in his book, Red Fog Over America and others. And there's I wish I could tell you about all of them. They're all deserving, everyone, to be here. And the top 20 modern conspiracy scientists, I call them, that Victor Thorne has. Now, this little book, and you'll enjoy it. You really will. Victor Thorne's Conspiracy Hall of Fame is only $10. Only just $10. Please send $5 with it for shipping and handling. A total of $15 for the book, Conspiracy Hall of Fame. Again, our phone number, 1-800-234-9673. Our address, Power of Prophecy, 1708 Patterson Road, Austin, Texas, 78733. See, I can talk just as fast as my 25-year-old granddaughter can. You know, have you noticed how the modern generation, now Victor's different. I think he's learned how to, you know, control his enthusiasm for these subjects. Or he, you know, just, but they talk so fast. I don't, maybe it's, you know, probably it's my grandchildren because they're so intelligent. Yeah, that's it. Okay. Okay. Let's go right on now to the second half of our program. Victor Thorne is my guest. New World Order Assassins is his book. Welcome back to the program, Victor.
Oh, it's great to be here, and good to hear you talking about some of these individuals and in the Conspiracy Hall of Fame book, because what it was, Tex, is kind of my homage to these, a lot of these guys who've been forgotten, who've done such valuable, made such valuable contributions in, you know, the last 20 or 30 years. And some of them have gone by the wayside, and these were the ones I really cut my teeth on when I delved into this, you know, 20 years ago. So I just a little tribute to these guys who really paved the way for me so many years ago.
Good point. And a few of them passed away in very unusual circumstances, like William Cooper.
Oh, yeah, yeah, William Cooper and, yeah, and even Jim Keith. So, yeah, some of them met untimely demises also.
William Cooper, you know, I had him on my radio program. We were good friends. People probably can order from us the audio tape of the program that I did with William Cooper on, of all subjects, UFOs.
Yep.
And he was a believer in that, but he had a certain angle on it. I recently read on the internet, you know, there are these, you know, this Cass Sunstein and his cognitive infiltration. You know, the czar, one of the czars at the White House.
Oh, yeah.
They're putting out all kind of baloney out there. And, you know, somebody said that, you know, Tex Mars lied about William Cooper's death. I can't even remember saying anything about William Cooper's death, but maybe I did. I mean, you know, after 25 years of this work, I probably just read the news account of it. But Cooper was killed by the feds. I understand there was a shootout, but maybe not. Maybe they just murdered him in cold blood, which is sort of their modus operandi. But, you know, they're trying to raise – they want us to fight each other. But, you know, they would love for me to grab you by the neck and say, Victor Thorne, what did you say about me? And you say, Tex Mars, I heard you're saying bad things about me. That's part of their game to try to get the Patriot movement to sort of have a demolition inside. What would you call it? To fight each other.
Yeah, divide and conquer.
Divide and conquer. Yeah. Well, if you hear these kinds of things, it's not true. I thought the world of William Cooper, and it was good friends of him. So don't believe any of that stuff at all. I respect every one of these 20 people. On this list very much. Now, let's go back to this book again, okay? Now, black people are justifiably upset to this day about the murder of Martin Luther King and even Malcolm X, the black Muslim leader.
Mm-hmm.
What happened? Let's start first with Martin Luther King, since he's the most famous and well-known. Was that a conspiracy?
Oh, that absolutely was, and the primary reason why he was targeted, he was really a big part of the civil rights movement, the most influential, and the Democrats loved him at that time. Not so much the Republicans, but the Democrats did. But then, when Lyndon Johnson was in the White House after John Kennedy's assassination, and the Vietnam War was raging on, and really, Martin Luther King did a couple things that cemented his fate. One was that he denounced in the most vehement terms the Vietnam War. And secondly, even more so, is that he started calling, this is the last few months of his life he was planning this, was that he wanted a poor people's march on Washington, D.C., where they would set up this encampment of about 250,000 people right on the mall in Washington, D.C. Now, this wouldn't be a weekend event like Glenn Beck has, where people come and people go. Martin Luther King wanted to have a more permanent impact, where he wanted this to be a revolving encampment. So, in other words, when some people left, he would bring in other poor people, so that there would be 250,000 people right in the heart of Washington, D.C., for all the world to see. And Lyndon Johnson was so furious about this that I can't even use the language on your show text that he used, but it's in the book. But he says, this blankety blank blank is going to cost me the White House. And at that point, you know, when Martin Luther King, they didn't mind, the powers that be didn't mind when he, let's say, stayed within his boundaries, okay? They could pat him on the head, and he was the civil rights leader. But when he started going outside of that and stepping on people's toes, he then became an immediate danger to those in power. And that's really the thing that most ties all of these victims together, Tex, is that they posed an immediate, very dangerous threat to certain people in power. And that's why they had to be eliminated right at that time. So, you know, you hear people, you know, in this movement saying, oh, the New World Order has been trying to kill me for 15 years. And that's just blowing smoke, because that's not the way these people operate. If they want to kill somebody, they kill them. And all of these chapters are a testimony to that, that they don't waste time. They don't play ring around the rosy. If they want someone dead, they kill them, and that's it.
You know, it is interesting, though, that certain people they have not killed. You know, I'm not going to pride myself and say, well, you know, they want to kill Tex Mars. I've never said that. But I've always felt you just got to, like you, for example, in writing books like this, the things you do. Do you ever think about the possibility of your being killed, or do you just say, well, I'm going to do it regardless?
No, I don't even, you know, a lot of people have asked me that, and I don't even think about it. And one of the reasons why, and it really touching upon something that you said at the bottom of the hour here, was that this book and the information that you present, and, you know, it is very dark and ominous at sometimes and conspiratorial, but the way I view it is, Tex, is that this information empowers people.
Mm-hmm.
That if we go through life with our eyes clouded or, you know, wear rose-colored glasses, we can't see the way the world really is. And so this is, you know, this kind of information allows people to go to the next level. And when they look at not only the news, but the government or even their everyday life, they realize now that they have so much more that has empowered them via this knowledge or wisdom that, you know, I just think it adds so much to everyone's life. So I don't worry about the negative ramifications. I just forge ahead.
I like that. Empowers people. And your book, New World Order Assassins, in my opinion, is going to empower people, and we're going to have a whole new generation of conspiracy researchers, scientists, and exposers. And I think that's good. And, you know, I see that on the internet more and more, and no wonder they want to close down the internet or control it and try to license websites and all of that, because it frightens them. They hate the light. Well, let's go on with some more light here. Sirhan Sirhan, they said he hid back in the kitchen after Bobby Kennedy had spoken and shot him in the head and killed him. What are some of the strange things that you have found about the supposed assassination of Bobby Kennedy, who was running for president at the time and seemed like he was going to get it?
Yeah, this was in August of 1968, and he was going full steam ahead. He would have gotten the Democratic nomination, and I firmly believe would have beat Richard Nixon in his second term, or is trying to get a second term. And what happened was that Bobby Kennedy, at the last minute, after he gave a speech at the Ambassador Hotel, he was going to walk out through the crowd and make his exit, but his Jewish handler at the time, at the last minute, said, no, we can't go that way. We have to go back through the pantry of the kitchen. When he did that, that's where Sirhan Sirhan was waiting. Now, the thing is, is Sirhan wasn't the killer. He was, again, the fall guy. And we know this as a fact because there were more than a dozen witnesses there who said that Sirhan never came anywhere closer than 3 to 5 feet in front of Bobby Kennedy. Never got closer than 3 to 5 feet in front of him. Yet, the coroner said that the fatal kill shot that killed Bobby Kennedy came from behind his right ear. Mm-hmm. So there was no way that Sirhan was ever behind him. Plus, 13 different bullets were found on the scene, yet Sirhan's gun only held 8 shots. So, and, you know, I go so far as to say, without giving away too much of the book, that I don't believe Sirhan even fired an actual shot that day, because he was in such a hypnotic trance, a mind-control trance, that the powers that be couldn't allow this man to just start shooting willy-nilly when he was in this compromised state. So I believe they gave him like either a starter's pistol or a gun that was just filled with blanks. And the real killer, who's named in the book, came from out of the shadows from behind and did the actual killing. Mm. And, you know, that's one of the things that differentiates this book from a lot of other conspiracy books that delve into these subjects, is that they blame it solely on someone like Sirhan, and they say that he was under mind control and he killed while hypnotized. I take it to the next level and say he wasn't even the killer. He wasn't even firing any live shots. Mm-hmm. That they just use the mind control as a red herring to dangle in front of people so that they divert them onto a different path.
One thing is for sure, Ted Kennedy, Senator Ted Kennedy, certainly was frightened off and never really delved into the mysteries of both of his brothers' deaths, did he?
No, he did not. And, actually, when you see Marilyn Monroe and Mary Pinchot Meyer and both of the Kennedy brothers, I think that Ted Kennedy at that point got the message loud and clear that these are taboo subjects, and he's... And I know people that have actually approached Ted Kennedy and asked him, and his face goes white, and he just absolutely clams up. So,
and then, of course, he evidently had the scandal in his life, including the Mary Jo Kopechne death. Probably, you know how Israel Mossad is, they have a big dossier on all of these people in case they tend to stray out of line, don't they?
Oh, for sure, for sure. Yeah. And, you know, when you look back at J. Edgar Hoover and then James Jesus Angleton, and Angleton worked directly with the Israeli Mossad, and you know, Angleton definitely had ties with J. Edgar Hoover, who had a dossier on everybody. So, this information was out there, and it was real easy to compromise these figures to have them keep their mouths shut. And, you know, not only did J. Edgar Hoover have a dossier on the Kennedys, but the Kennedys actually hired their own private investigators and compiled a dossier on J. Edgar Hoover. compiled all his homosexuality, his ties to the mob, his gambling addiction. So it was almost like, you remember Mad Magazine, how it was spy versus spy? Like dueling dossiers on each other.
That's a good point. And one of the things that's interesting to me is I remember as a young man, I was always interested in politics. And right before Kennedy's assassination the last year, all these stories kept coming back, and I believed them. And they were true, in fact, of how behind the scenes, Bobby and Jack Kennedy were planning to fire J. Edgar Hoover. As soon as they got into their second term, they were going to call it, you know, resignation, but they were going to force him out. And old J. Edgar Hoover had been around for about, 30 years, and he didn't want to go. He was enjoying the lifestyle of luxury and power that he had. But they absolutely were going to get rid of that guy as well as a lot of other folks.
Lyndon Johnson, yeah.
So I guess they could not permit him. It was dangerous for John Kennedy to be allowed a second term.
Oh, for sure. And here's an interesting sidebar, is that after the Kennedys were going to dump J. Edgar Hoover, they were going to make the guy who ran the LAPD, a guy named William Parker, they were going to make him the head of the FBI. Now, after John Kennedy was killed, Bobby remained attorney general, but he never followed through on making William Parker the head of the FBI, okay? So Parker resented this. Now, if we leap forward to 1968 when Bobby Kennedy was killed in Los Angeles, who was the guy primarily responsible for covering up the murder? William Parker.
My goodness.
William Parker was so furious that the Kennedys had reneged on their offer to make him head of the FBI that he turned on the Kennedy family then and covered up Bobby Kennedy's murder. So there's another one of those threads, Tex, that I was telling you about that just weaves through, and it's all these little interesting asides that really make the book intriguing that, you know, we live in a small world.
We do indeed. Now, talking about a small world, Charles Manson had his own little small world with, as you say in your book report, some 30, well, we could call them crazies like him, into Satanism and just all kinds of things. But Charles Manson didn't just have, you know, Susan Atkins and Tex Watson and the nuts around him. But he had a lot of very famous people, and you know, we can look at the guy and say, how could anybody want to associate with him? But I mean, big names, I mean, the Folgers and others who were very rich, right? I mean, there's a story until your book came out that has not really been told about the murder of Charles Manson.
Yeah. This, I think, maybe is the most interesting chapter in the whole book, because everyone sees Manson as this wild-eyed, crazy, homicidal serial killer, when in actuality, there's a lot of evidence that Manson was actually almost like a Timothy McVeigh or a Lee Harvey Oswald, in that he was involved in this operation to ultimately discredit the anti-war movement or the flower power, the peace movement. And the people he knew, it was amazing, the Beach Boys and Neil Young, Timothy Leary, and Anton LaVey, who is the head of the Church of Satan, or Satanism, and the filmmaker Kenneth Anger, and Terry Melcher, who was Doris Day's son. So he had these really amazing contacts in Southern California, and there's even, you know, talk that he was an informant for the LAPD, and I believe this could be true, because with all the crimes he was committing before the Helter Skelter slayings, I mean, it's statutory rape and drug dealing and theft and you know, other acts of violence. This guy couldn't get arrested, Tex, if he wanted to. And the reason why is that they needed this guy to still be around for the Tate-LaBianca murders. And, you know, I really believe he was sheep-dipped, which means that he was basically used as part of an intel process where he's given one identity, but in actuality there's another identity behind the scenes. And, you know, once the Tate-LaBianca murders happened, Southern California went into this state of lockdown. It was massive paranoia, and the media then used this against, you know, the flower power movement, and really pushed forward their aims then so they could keep the Vietnam War going and all these other things. So when you look at this case, it really turns it on its head when you read, you know, what Manson was really all about. And, you know, it's as far down the rabbit hole, I guess, as you can go. But really amazing stuff there.
Well, you know, it is amazing. And when you look at Charlie Manson and the drug, you know, situation going on there, they blamed it on everything from marijuana to LSD and the drug culture. But as it turns out, Timothy Leary was being financed by the CIA, the guy, you know, recommending young people to take drugs. The Grateful Dead was actually being paid by the CIA to do its work. So, you know, it's amazing that the whole counterculture that even to this day, you know, is worshipped by young people, was who claim to hate authority and hate the establishment, but the whole thing was put together by the establishment, by the authorities, the CIA and so forth, wasn't it?
It was a big mind control experiment is what it was. And, you know, Manson started off, when he got out of prison, he went up to San Francisco, Haight-Ashbury, and that's where he got a lot of his so-called family who were, you know, involved in some type of mind control experiment up there. Then he brought them all down to Los Angeles. And the other thing then is, you know, Manson's ties to the film community, and especially to Roman Polanski.
Oh, yes, because Sharon Tate, well, that was her husband, wasn't it?
Right, right. And there's, in this chapter, then that weaves ahead then into the John Lennon chapter, and it brings a whole Jewish element into it. And, you know, there's a lot of talk that Polanski was actually targeted by the Jews because of the movie he made, Rosemary's Baby.
Oh.
He depicts the Jews in a very unflattering light by saying that they practice this, like, blood libel, and they had these Talmudic black magic rituals, and so...
Oh, John Lennon did that?
Well, John Lennon then lived in... No, this was Roman Polanski.
Oh, Polanski, I'm sorry, I got...
Yeah,
okay.
How he depicted the Jews in Rosemary's Baby. And then, what's interesting is then that that movie was filmed in the famous Dakota apartment building in New York City, and then that's where John Lennon was assassinated, because that's where he was living, was in the same building. And John Lennon also had, you know, many accusations against him that he was anti-Semitic, or he didn't really paint the Jews in the most favorable light. So that's another element, even going back to Malcolm X in that chapter, that I think this book is the first ever to uncover that right before he died, Malcolm X was given interviews in Egypt, where he was saying some very negative things about Israel and the Jews. And, you know, being that these interviews were conducted in the Middle East, they most certainly didn't like that kind of information coming out. So, you know, that's another one of the threads in this book, is that always beneath the surface text, you see this, you know, Mossad or Zionist element that's always there.
Yeah, how one tiny people can be responsible for so much maximum evil is quite an interesting thing. I think they have some heifers in another dimension, shall we say.
Uh-huh.
Well, I'll tell you, we're about to run out of time here. We've only got about a minute left. And, boy, we didn't get to one that I really wanted to – well, really, the occult ritual, as you very correctly phrase it, at Columbine High School, where Harris and Klebold were both Jewish and Christian haters. And I think,
oh, absolutely.
Now, that's an interesting thing, and they were certainly not neo-Nazis.
No, they were the exact opposite, and this really was a ritual there, and when you see the number of actual shooters inside that school, it wasn't just these two men.
Oh, wow.
Bringing all that firepower into that school, that it's really, we've been told so little, Tex, about
these events. Well, I'll tell you, we're going to have to sort of leave it to the audience to get your book and find out more. Like, we're running out of total out of time now. And then you also, The Cult of Diana. Wow.
Yeah. That's
the assassination of Diana. You have some extremely interesting stuff. Very, very powerful. Well, I just want to tell you, Victor, how much I appreciate you. And I especially appreciate your insight and your willing to share with so many people the truth about world history. Thank you so much for being our guest today on Power of Prophecy.
Well, it's always my pleasure. And as I said, Tex, in that Conspiracy Hall of Fame book, that you're the most prolific conspiracy writer that there's ever been that I've come across. And I put that in the book. So, you know, I'm really talking to a legend here, and I appreciate any time I can come on and just share some airspace with you. It's great being here.
Well, it's very kind of you. And please pray that I'll have the strength to continue. And we'll pray for you, too. Okay, that was Victor Thorne. New World Order Assassins, of course, our phone number here to order his book, 1-800-234-9673. And, hey, Victor, you still on there?
I certainly am.
Hey, because I wanted to give people your website.
Oh, it's wingtv.net.
Wing, like the wing of an airplane, tv.net.
Yes.
There you go. Other books, information by Victor Thorne, wingtv.net. Oh, I'm so glad I caught you before you went. All right, that's great. Folks, my great prayer is that you'll tune in each week during this same time. Tune in and discover the power of prophecy.